You're listening to the Elevate Podcast, and I'm your host, Robert Glazer. Join me as I talk to world-class performers about how they build their capacity and reach greater heights in leadership, business, and life, and how you can do the same. Welcome to the Elevate Podcast. This is another edition of Weekend Conversations. Each week, I'll take a deeper dive into an article or interview I shared during the week. And joining me to do this, as always, is my co-producer of the Elevate Podcast, Mick. How's it going this week?
Hey, Bob. It's going well. How are you?
Good. Another Friday. All right. So this week, we're going to be talking about the latest Friday Forward, which is called Royal Flush. Want to kick us off?
Yeah. So this is a discussion of the recent media frenzy surrounding Catherine, Princess of Wales, often known, especially in the U.S., as Kate Middleton. Kate, as a lot of people know, disappeared from the public eye in January, at the beginning of January, which was a move that was considered quite unusual at the time, given her pretty major public presence. Initially, the royal family said Kate underwent a routine abdominal surgery in January and wouldn't be seen in public until after Easter as a result of that. Of course, this being the royal family, the public was highly skeptical of this explanation. And after extensive speculation grew louder and louder, Kate eventually revealed a couple weeks ago a pretty tragic truth of the situation, which is that she had been diagnosed with cancer in January after her surgery and has been undergoing treatment. So, Bob, why did this catch your attention? Are you a secret royal family obsessive?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise people to learn. I am not a royalist, nor am I really an anti-royalist. I live somewhere in the Switzerland of royalty. But it was interesting because what I do know, and you know, having kind of watched the interview, you know, I followed over the years and watched the interview with, I think it was Oprah, with Harry and Meghan, and versus, you know, Kate and William, is that Kate plays the part, right? She is always out there. The media, she's kind of all in on this in a way that Diana and Meghan definitely were not. So we just saw that she sort of disappeared and there was this thing, you know, this surgery, and then she's just nowhere to be found and you can't take a picture of her. I was like, clearly something is going on here. And you know, given the British tabloid media and the way that they are followed, you know, I watched it sort of kind of continue the water warm and continue to boil otherwise. And I remember thinking to myself, if she was fine, she'd just go wave and take a picture from the porch and this thing would be over. And so I watched with interest. And then when the photo was released and then everyone tearing it apart and doctoring it, and it just seemed like there was just kind of like an own goal in terms of how the royal family handled this and then kind of, I think, the scrutiny that it brought them under.
It's interesting because we obviously can't know exactly what happened. Maybe someday we'll get the full story, if people believe the full story that comes from the royal family. What I would imagine happened here, my best guess, is that Kate did indeed have this scheduled surgery. I think we know pretty definitively that happened. And I can't help but wonder if the royal family essentially thought that because it was truly supposed to be routine, a relatively brief absence wouldn't be that notable to people and they could just bring her back out at the end of January or early February and say, here, she's back. And of course, because we know from Kate's announcement that the cancer that she required treatment for was discovered as part of the surgery, I can't help but wonder if that revelation triggered a pretty enormous panic and crisis management situation with the family, where they suddenly realized that not only did they have this disastrous diagnosis that they would have to explain to the public, but also that the absence that they had thought would just be a few weeks would actually have to be a few months.
Yeah, and look, she's a person and a human and is entitled to her privacy. You know, my assumption is actually when they went into that, they had that surgery. You have surgery if there's something painful or wrong or discovered, and maybe you don't think it's a big deal, but it turned out to be a bigger deal. So I probably underplaying a little bit the reason why kind of went into the surgery. Maybe they were hoping for the best, and it wasn't the best. But I think they had this look. people like to control narratives, and they had this narrative and this timeline that they were hoping to control. And like a lot of things in life, it's messy. And then when you hold on to that, you get yourself kind of stuck in that. And I think that's a little bit of what happened here, particularly because, you know, they weren't willing to say anymore. We can talk about kind of what some of the remedies were. Because again, I just think this is, I think it's an interest. It's just an interesting microcosm of sort of crisis and public management. First, you have to just know your audience. Like, these are very public figures that are followed kind of nonstop. That's not the game I'm playing in my life. That's not the game you're playing. But that is kind of their role, and that is the royal family role. And they're a business, really, right? They're not in power. They have kind of a revenue stream and an income stream, and they're very public. And it's no different. If you make your living as an influencer and you kind of disappear from your channel and you stop responding, like, people, you know, you've changed the game on people. So again, you got to understand the sort of business that you're in and the position that you're in. And this was definitely kind of a deviation from normal.
So that fits pretty well into, there are a few facets of crisis management and communication that you focus on in the post. And the first one is similar to what you're talking about, the importance of knowing your credibility level that you have with your audience. And I think it's fair to say that the royal family, partly because of everything that happened with Princess Diana in the 90s, and also I think a big part, what you were just saying with Harry and Meghan and the Oprah interview.
And let's not forget, I didn't think about it till this minute, but let's not forget Andrew. Like, that was...
No, that is another good example. And yeah. So just constantly embroiled in public relations, controversy and scandal, and a massive amount of distrust with the public. So what do you think the royal family's mistake here was? Do you think that they thought that they could get away with this type of vague message? Or do you think that they knew that there would be speculation and they just thought that they could ride it out?
Yeah, I think they thought they could control it. And, you know, the when I interviewed Ed Bastian, the CEO of Delta, this was one of the themes and probably another Friday for it. I mean, he's an expert in crisis management. And he talked about how Delta had just paid like this $1.6 billion bonus in February 2024. And so into the pandemic, they had just taken care of their employees. He knew he had a trust bank, and they had the right relationships where they could lean into that with their employees in the middle of a crisis and really do some things that were different than any other airline. I don't think the royal family had a trust bank with the public, or particularly with the press, after a fair number of kind of messy cover-up situations. And again, in my mind, like, some things are just obvious, right? And again, all I kept thinking when I kept hearing about this, I was like, if Kate could wave out the window, she would just wave out the window and make this go away, right? So there's something... This is like a suspension of disbelief here, because if they could make this go away in a second, they would make it go away. And something is prohibiting that from happening. So I, again, as someone who's pretty neutral, like, I had no benefit of the doubt, because it just didn't make sense, knowing what I know of how they normally live their life in the situation.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? 2 years ago, I bought a dual suspension mountain bike for the first time. And it pushed me to ride trails that I had never been willing to try before. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has exceptional capability that will have you seeing the possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. The Lexus GX comes with available dynamic sky panorama glass roof, available front row massaging seats, best-in-class towing capacity, available 33-inch all-terrain tires, and available multi-terrain select. I've seen the new Lexus GX popping up all around my town, and not only does it have the capabilities to take you to new places on and off the road, but it's a great-looking car. The new Lexus GX is ready to raise the bar for you. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. With everyone fighting for attention these days, how can you get your business to stand out and connect with customers? It's easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media postings, and even event management. You'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track your growth. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence, knowing that your emails are actually reaching your customers, thanks to their best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. Constant Contact was actually the first email marketing platform I ever used almost 20 years ago, and it's a testament to the product's quality that it's still the standard for email marketing today. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
What do you think is a good way for a leader or a leadership team to take stock of whether they have that sort of trust bank or whether they have a deficit that they have to deal with?
It's a good, I mean, you probably need to sample some people, right? I think we probably have a bad sense of our own trust with other people unless we are very self-aware. So you probably need to, you know, sample your constituents. This is also where if you're sitting around strategically, You test some things and some trial balloon with your team and you say, look, I'm going to go with this. And someone says, but then here's what the reaction is going to be to that. And what's your response? And they say, oh, well, I never thought of that. So I think I always talk about playing it through a few cycles, like kind of thinking about some of the logical, you know, cause and effect. Like if there was a discussion going on, they said, well, look, let's say they knew that it could have been serious. Well, if we go with this story, and it ends up being more serious, then what are we going to say, right? And they might have realized, well, let's not go down that path because maybe there's a different path that doesn't get us stuck if the wind doesn't blow in our direction. But it's hard to assess your own. I think the only way to do that is to kind of do a little sampling maybe of your, I don't know whether you pull in a tabloid person into a, you know, quiet room and say, let me run some of these by you and we'll give you the exclusive story. But some of it's strong self-awareness and some of it's looking at the data. Again, in that Delta case, they had just paid the largest profit share in the history of the company out to employees. They had just put every employee's name on an airplane, a couple of weeks before. And so I think they had a good sense that they had some trust with that constituency.
Yeah, and I think it can be a little difficult to figure out exactly how much of a trust bank you might have. But I do think it probably should be easier to understand if you have a deficit.
Or someone else can tell you that, right? If you want to know, someone else can tell you that. If you want to ask, you know, the opinion without giving the circumstances.
Or I think a really good illustration of this, and this actually is something that perhaps the royal family could have used as a barometer. If you say, for example, if you get caught in a lie or if you mislead people or if, say, you're in charge of a company and you say, we're not going to do any layoffs and then you have to do layoffs because the economy takes a turn for the worse. I think that if you can look back on that and basically say, have there been recent cases where we said something and it turned out not to be true or we had to reverse course in a really drastic way, sort of figuring out how often you've done those types of things, how recently you've done them, I would think would be a pretty good barometer of if at the very least you have a deficit.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And look, let's be honest. Right now, if Boeing says anything, no one's believing them, right? I mean, that's a good example. Like they need to operate as in they are in a deep, deep, deep trust deficit with both their customers and the public, because I wouldn't believe anything they say about safety right now.
So trying to, because I think it's a little difficult to have this specifically in the context of how the royal family should have handled Kate's health news. But if, say, you are a company and you have this new benefit that you're going to roll out to your employees, do you think that if you aren't confident that you have this good trust bank with people, it's best to kind of undersell and to say, well, we're working on this. We're hoping that it'll be ready by Q4 and that we'll be able to tell you more at this point. And then even if you think that it could be early, if you roll it out earlier than people are expecting, it's a pleasant surprise rather than if it's later than you are, if it's later than you're informing people, it's a disappointment.
There's two things. I think there's one, constantly being under expectations so that you have an opportunity to to improve on that. I think that's a tried and true principle, and we've talked about that. But there's this other thing where I've always said to my kids and people on my teams, like, there is a best version of the truth, right? And there's a version of the truth that doesn't have everything out there, but it can't be proven untrue, versus there's a lot of tack that people take where they're kind of, they need it to go their way in order to be true, or aspects of it could be proven untrue. And when that happens, then I think trust falls apart in the whole thing. And so I think there's multiple examples of that. And I think the layoff one's a great example. No leader should ever say we're never going to have layoffs. Look, there were two earthquakes this week that could have dramatically, New York and Taiwan, that could have totally changed the company's fortunes or otherwise. It would be true to say, look, if our current performance continues, you know, or we hit these targets, I don't see any need for layoffs, right? But I don't think anyone should ever give anyone certainty. Like, there is no certainty. And I understand in some cases you'd be proven to be true. In a lot of cases, if it's not, I think you've lost your trust. So again, sometimes there's a shorter version of the truth that doesn't have it might leave out some details, but it can't be proven untrue. It can be proven that it wasn't comprehensive, but it can't be proven untrue. But I think that's a real fundamental difference, right? In this case, had they said after the surgery, you know what, Kate actually had some complications, as there are from surgery. Someone might have thought that was an infection or whatever. They could have, and she's going to need a little more time and privacy, and the family just kind of wants to deal with that themselves. Like, that would have been true. Like, you know, and no one, it's not the whole story, but at least it would have been true.
So when you say the best version of the truth, do you mean something that is true but is positioning the truth in the best possible light for you? Do you mean, what do you sort of mean?
Yeah, look, I think it could, there is some positioning of it, but it also doesn't just have to be everything, right? Sometimes people don't need all of the details, right? Saying you had a unexpected complication from the surgery, again, that's true in that context. Like, needing to say it's cancer is also true, but it's just more truth that's not necessary. So I think sometimes it's succinct. You know where I've heard this, where parents are dealing with kids who ask, like, younger kids, difficult questions around, you know, where do babies come from or otherwise. And some of the better parents I've heard, they answer like the simple question simply and truthfully and move on. Right. Yes, this is what happens otherwise. And then they move on, versus sitting down and getting into a long thing that opens up 100 more questions. I've seen some parents. I know some parents that are really good at that. And it's never a lie, but it's just like a buttoned up version of the truth. And like, let's move through it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Do you think that it's obviously easier to get away with this best version of the truth strategy when you have a trust bank? You know, I think that if people have reason to believe that someone will be honest with them, they are probably less likely to poke holes in what someone is saying, even if it's relatively vague. Do you think that this is an opportunity that can be afforded to people or to institutions that have a pretty serious trust deficit? Or do you think that you're kind of stuck if you are in that type of deficit?
There's telling the whole truth, there's telling the best version of the truth, and then there's trying to spin and control the narrative. Even if you're in a trust deficit, I have to think you're better off going with that solution than trying to spin the narrative or control the narrative, right? So it's just a matter of, what in those cases, like, if you're really operating, should you be probably overly transparent and overdo it and vote? Is that the best possible course? Yes, but that may have other complications in it, you know, otherwise. Again, let's pretend there's some issue going on with Boeing, you know, and they might say, look, we are doing a comprehensive review of all of our planes that have been put in service in the last 10 years right now to see what we can find. That is a true statement, and they may be doing that, versus we've done that, making the same statement saying, and we've already identified, you know, 12 problems that are serious and took those planes out of service or otherwise, right? The full thing might cause a total panic. They still took that action. The first one's still true. Sometimes there's some real world implications of what you're trying to juggle.
Yeah, and I think it is I think you can claim almost some degree of, I wouldn't call it a moral high ground in all cases, but like at least an argumentative high ground. And I think that if the royal family were to hypothetically go the route that you suggested in the post and say, there's been some complications, you know, there's going to be a more extended recovery than expected, please respect Kate's privacy. At least I think that when the news actually came out, they would have had some real authority to say, listen, this is why we asked for privacy. People didn't stop poking around at this. And
right. They would have made all of these tabloid people look really terrible and say, how would you feel if you were trying to deal with this with your kids or otherwise? They would have owned the narrative and they would have owned the upper hand on that. And look, it did cause sort of a retreat. I think a lot of these conspiracy theorists and these tabloids were publishing really nice. I think a lot of people had a lot of egg on their face because, again, they gave crazy light to things that were not true. But the reason they did that, I think, was there was a little fuel on the fire.
Hey, Elevate listeners. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify is the partner you need to keep the cash register ringing for your e-commerce business. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading platforms. I advise a lot of companies in the e-commerce space, and almost all of them have migrated to Shopify. And as a buyer, what I love about buying from Shopify-enabled sites is that they already know who I am, and I don't have to create a new account or enter all my payment info. The Shop Pay service makes it faster and easier to buy, which surely helps with conversions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/elevate, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/elevate now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/elevate.
And I think there was an absence of a narrative that people found remotely plausible, which was also a big part of the problem. So
yeah, exactly.
The third point, we have to talk about the photo. And if people don't know what we're talking about, the royal family, I believe it was on the day that celebrates Mother's Day in the UK. And there was a publication of a photo of Kate with her children. And regardless of how it was intended, it was received by the public as an attempt at taking control of the narrative.
Everything's
yeah,
okay.
Damage control. And of course, the photo wound up to have been edited, which was pounced upon by people on social media. And it was such a credible claim that it was doctored that the Associated Press issued a kill order and essentially told media outlets to publish the fact that the photo was not legitimate, which is something I had never heard of happening. Seemed like a pretty...
Yeah, by the way, that's like an email recall. It always makes people more interested in looking at it. It never seems like a good idea.
Yeah. And so this was a pretty catastrophic occurrence in the management of this story.
Well, and then remember, there were the initial reaction was Kate was playing with Photoshop and made some mistakes before she just, you know, threw out their family picture. Like, that's a total load of crap.
I honestly, that is in this whole story, the one thing I really, really want to know more about was, did someone tell Kate or her publicist, let's hop on Twitter and say that it was your fault because you were doing some amateur photo editing?
Yeah. So that was another, for me, that was another, like the two moments for me was she would just wave if she could. And that is the most unbelievable thing that I have ever heard. So now again, we question everything, right? Because in the letter, just saying it was inappropriate. There were some edits made. Again, whether Kate tried to fall on the sword of that, but I just can't see this princess kind of playing with Photoshop on pictures and releasing them, you know, without running them by anyone. It's literally not believable.
The premise was just so absurd on its face that I wonder how a PR person could come up with it. Why do you think that they did this? What do you think provoked this really drastic deviation from their previous strategy, which was she's not going to be in public. It's because of the surgery. There's no need to panic. And then did they just succumb to the pressure? Like, what do you think happened there?
As I said before, that first narrative was just not believable 2 months later. Whether you had hernia surgery, appendix, otherwise, like, you'd be in a position to look out a window and wait, like, you just would. So it wasn't believable. I think the pressure built up and the pressure built up, and they tried to control the narrative. Like, again, trying to control the perception is a super dangerous thing. There's another Friday Forward that we'll write in the future on my list around a story in our company where a few years ago where something happened with a different company, and there was a discussion around commenting on that so we could try to impact people's feelings about how they felt about that situation at that other company. I was like, no, this is like, this is danger. You can't try to control how people feel and how they react. But I think that's kind of what it was, right? It was an attempt to get control of that narrative and give the story that they were kind of stuck on, you know, at that point. And it was a disaster because, you know, it was days later when it sort of forced her hand to then come out with the truth a few days later. Because now the rumor mills are going like full speed, right? After that, like, is she dead? Is like, what otherwise? So now it's way past worse than the reality.
I can't help but wonder if this is an illustration of the fact, and this is something a lot of companies deal with too, of a knee-jerk crisis response to a pretty serious public relations challenge. And so I think of an example of occasionally Elon Musk will do something where there will be an article or a story that comes out about ad sellers being spooked by posting on the platform. And he'll get on his account and say, actually, we have more ads than ever. And it seems like it's this knee-jerk response that doesn't go through proper scrutiny and vetting and understanding of the playing field. And this, I think, connects back to the...
And he's not going to take anyone's advice, so that's probably a little bit of a different situation.
But this connects a little bit back to the idea of the trust deficit and how you have to play things differently if you don't have high trust. Where if you have an audience that doesn't trust you, you kind of, I think, have to stick to your strategy, even if it is not a perfect strategy. And so I do wonder what would have happened if the royal family never releases this photo. They're aware of all of the speculation, all of the crazy rumors, some really salacious ones, not even related to health. And I just wonder what would have happened if they had stayed the course with their silent approach and just tried to wait out the public.
Well, if you play that, let's go to play the tape out. So they might have bought themselves another month, you know, a month or two. But again, what is the goal? So Kate has cancer. You can't change that. So is your objective... This is where the argument about telling the kids, again, unless you think you can never have that come out, like, and that's your goal, that you're never going to have that come out, then you're going to have to address with that or deal with that at one point. And I would think all the other tabloid stuff was making it worse. Like, are your mom and dad getting divorced? Is there other stuff? So while I understood that part of the story, it was also not super believable because, again, you were going to either buy yourself some time and you were going to be in the same place, or your goal was to try to, you know, maybe the strategy should have been different, was to just never discuss this and never have it be public.
It seems like the idea was, well, I guess that is a really good point. I don't know what the initial plan was. I think it's impossible to know without knowing the nature of Kate's diagnosis. And, you know, I don't think it's responsible to speculate on that really. But I do wonder if, depending on the severity of the situation, if they thought that there was a way for the public to never know about it. And I do think that that is related to an additional point on top of the three that are in the post of getting really clear on what your objective and what your goal is. And you have this story that you're telling to people. And what is the long term, as you said, run the tape out or run the tape forward? What's the long term message that you want to leave people with?
Look, they could have tried that. They could have said, look, she had some things. She's going to be gone for a couple of months. It's her privacy. She doesn't want to discuss with it as with each of you. And they could have tried for that. And she wouldn't have been wrong, like, again, for a public figure. But I don't think they had a overall strategy or knew what good was. If you're just trying to buy time, but you think it's going to get out eventually, again, then the kid dynamic and all that stuff doesn't make sense to me, because that's a conversation. That conversation, whether you have it in February or March or April, it's not like they're going to be older. It's not like it's going to be less difficult. So I'm not clear what the intended objective was.
Yeah. And of course, you're referring to the kid dynamic you're referring to is the explanation that was given that part of the reason that there was a long delay in sharing the news was out of consideration of how Kate and William would share the news with their children of the diagnosis.
Yes, exactly.
And so there's a really key part of this that is sort of related to the first point, and it's that we live in a pretty different information environment now than we did even 10 years ago. I think that there is evidence of a lot of general distrust in institutions. There's an army of people who are looking to pick apart everything that a leader in an institution says. Do you think, is there any way to be shielded from this type of speculation of the rumor mill and of social media conspiracy theorizing? Or do you think that this is just the game now and it's something that leaders need? It prompts them to be even more careful and thoughtful about this stuff.
It's a really good question. And while it is the game, I think a lot of people have made conscious decisions whether they're going to play or not play. Right. We had Cal Newport on a few weeks ago. He has no social media. He has no public presence. Like, you can't find him. He writes all these books, and that's how he communicates to the world. So the expectation of his privacy and that stuff is pretty high because he's consistent about that. If you've leveraged that, if you've used that, if you're 24/7 on influencer, if you've built your brand on being public and sharing all of your stuff and being vulnerable, then it's kind of hard to cherry pick. And this I think is the reality. I think some people have made their bet, right? The for better or for worse, like the royal family serves as a tourism attraction, right? Like they are the face of all this tourism and revenue. And so that's not a private function. Like, you, some point you have to make your decision. And Meghan and Harry were like, we don't want to do this. And they opted out. And again, I guess so. Yeah, they're entitled to the privacy or not talk about it otherwise. Now, when you go on Oprah and air all your laundry, right, that's there's something different. So I think there's this interesting nuance of, like, I think you have to just, you got to be careful about you're in the game or out the game, you know, of otherwise. Like, there are some things I don't talk about publicly, and I've kept them private. And so I would expect them to be private, but it's hard to like, I don't like monetize that or use that and then kind of have the, I want to pull it back. And this is why a lot of people who are in the 24/7 influencer space, I think, eventually become depressed or disillusioned because they can't turn off their public persona of their life.
This relates to a bit of a broader conversation of what does it really mean to be a celebrity? What does it mean to be a public figure? And if you rely upon public interest, and if you rely on your willingness to share facets of your life and your willingness to peel back the layer of your own privacy, or at least present a particular image of yourself in public in a very consistent manner, you know, to what degree does that require some degree of speculation into what your life is like and people picking at the things that you may not want to share? And I do think that there is a tie-in to something that you've talked about a lot in your writing and on this podcast, which is sort of leaders need to take a stance and need to be consistent about that. And they need to recognize that there are trade-offs. Like, a CEO who loves to play the media game and loves to use the media to create interest in their company, to move the market in their favor, they need to expect that if they do something in their personal life that invites some controversy, there's going to be a lot of coverage of that because they have created themselves as a person of interest in the public. And that has benefits, but it also has real costs.
Particularly if they put them out, people who put themselves out there as an example to be followed, right? And their curated life as a perfect solution or otherwise. And look, there's a lot of discussion around Andrew Huberman, you know, this week, who's a very public figure and health show and otherwise, and some personal laundry that was aired. And I haven't really dug into that enough to understand it. But there are a lot of people for whom, and we have written about them, they have put themselves out there as the standard or the example to follow. And like, that's kind of fair game in my book.
Yeah. And so the royal family, obviously, they can't really just stay shut in their homes and never appear in public. That's against the point of the institution. And I think that there's a lot of debate over the meaning of the royal family, the value of the royal family. That is, I think, part of the trust deficit, is I think that there is some degree of disillusionment and anti-royalism. But I think at the very least, people can agree that if it's an institution that should continue to have an outsized importance, there needs to be some sort of public life and the microscope that comes with that.
And look, they could do that. Again, you saw Meghan and Harry choose that, but there would be consequences to the revenue and the products and the things that sort of pay for and justify their existence. So I think that they're always similar to kind of talking about it. There are always choices, and those choices come with various outcomes and consequences. And I think consequences is often seen as sort of a singularly negative word, but I just think there's logical cause and effect of behavior.
Yeah, but the thing, and this is kind of the last discussion point, the thing that I've really found myself a little stuck on, and we had a pretty extensive conversation about this earlier this week in the editing of the post, I hope that people are cognizant of the fact that this was a really good example of something that I actually think happens a lot, where after all of that conspiratorial playing and theorizing and everything like that, the actual explanation for what was going on was just something really tragic and really sad. And I think that that sadly is often the case with conspiratorial thinking. Like sometimes it's just that something bad happened to someone and they don't want people to know. Sometimes something's not a conspiracy, but it's just incompetence and inability to handle a difficult situation. And I think that there has been a lot of focusing on what the royal family did wrong here. And I think that that is a good conversation to have. But I would hope that some of the people who were most relentlessly speculative about this wouldn't use the royal family's mistakes as a way to justify that speculation. Because I do think to some degree, even though I understand why it happened, it was a little irresponsible in my view.
Again, was it their right to do that or otherwise? And if you want to be really objective, you can say, look, there wasn't, everything else is an opinion around how they handled it or otherwise. The photo thing was really actually wrong, right? Like if you want to point to one thing and say like that was wrong, everything else is a judgment opinion. And I've already had someone let me know they strongly disagreed with my interpretation of it or otherwise. And, you know, that's their, that's their right. So yeah, look, it was an unfortunate situation under the whole thing, but it seemed to make a bad situation worse from what I can see.
Yeah, I would agree that the photo in particular is what you'd call an unforced error. So the quote of the week is from a different king, but a king nonetheless, Elvis Presley. The truth is like the sun. You can shut it out for a time, but it ain't going away. And just like with the Winston Churchill quote last week, I resisted the urge to do an impression. What resonates with you about that quote?
Not sure which I'd rather hear more, your Winston Churchill, one over, or your Elvis Presley. Well, I'll have you record off air and we'll pick one of them.
They're both bad, I'm sure.
I think this quote is more relevant today. I just think we live in an information world. Information is wants to be free and is pushing to the surface at rates that, you know, are unprecedented. And I've seen companies try to control things or otherwise, and it just seems like that's a strategy for a different era. And so, you know, I think generally you should assume in these situations that the truth will eventually come out, and I think that's a good way to orient your problem solving and solutioning around that.
I totally agree, and you have to be in front of it, not behind it.
Exactly. It you can be behind it. It's a lot harder to operate from behind than the front, particularly when you're talking about kind of storytelling and narrative and otherwise. So thanks for listening today, everyone. If you want to check out the post we just discussed, go to robertglazer.substack.com and look for the post titled Royal Flush. Check out future editions of Weekend Conversations, which will be in your podcast feed every Saturday morning. The best way to make sure you get those is to subscribe to the show or follow it on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, keep elevating.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.